Before we start the episode, I wanted to read the letter that is sent to the rescue team after the mission. This is a unique circumstance where you got feedback after a mission. You know, you drop a patient off, it's kind of the last you see them, and it's quite a nice letter to receive. So I'm just going to read the letter that was sent and then go on with the episode. I wanted to reach out and say thank you from the bottom of my heart for your perfectly executed mission that resulted in my medevac to Cornerbrook so I could have the critical medical intervention I desperately needed. As a career firefighter in New York, I tried to provide the highest quality care for my patients during their fire and medical emergencies. For the first time in my life, I found myself on the receiving end of a severe medical emergency out of my home country. I will forever be thankful and appreciative for the actions you all took that night for me. This was my fifth fly fishing trip to Newfoundland for Atlantic salmon, and my first, hopefully last, ride in a helicopter. Your skills and professionalism are something that I will remember for the rest of my life. I still cannot believe that you guys landed on the Rock River bank with limited clearance and such a large helicopter. I had surgery in the middle of August, and I'm finally on the mend. I had a severe dislocation with a torn labrum that needed to be reattached and multiple bone chips that were partially removed during surgery from the humerus striking the socket. The surgical option was the only viable one to get me back on the job doing what I love. The non-surgical option would most likely be career-ending. The recovery and my return to duty is 6 months. It's hard to think that I won't be riding in the fire truck until February or March, but I'm trying to focus on all the things that are in my control and I'm thankful for in my life. My fiancé also wanted to express her thanks to you all. She's well aware I'm a difficult patient. Be safe in your careers, and thank you for helping me get back to mine. Quite a cool message to get back from someone you rescue. Of course, it wasn't me. This rescue was done by a team in Trenton and my course mate, Josh Terry. So here's the episode, and he'll tell the story. Rescue. All right. It's not lost to me that it's been quite a while since I've published an episode. So my apologies for that. I am working quite a bit, and I'm kind of away and trying to organize podcasts in mixing with schedules has been pretty challenging. I'm also trying to do a lot of them in person because I find they turn out a lot better, and I hope it's felt like that on the other end. So coming up, I have several booked, so there should be a steady stream of episodes coming from here on out to include someone who's heading up a project in Canada. It's very interesting, using drones for SAR. So I'll be talking to him, trying to get a good conversation about that, and some SAR techs to tell stories and kind of explore and hear some of the SAR exciting events that happen. So look forward to that. There should be lots of that coming out. So thank you for your patience. I appreciate you checking in and seeing when episodes come up. I've also met a few people come up to me and showed their support or told me they listened to the show. So that's, I really appreciate that. I always don't really know what to say when someone comes up because I'm kind of just going along with this project and trying to share some stories and insight. So for everyone who made it to the next SAR course, congratulations. For those of you who didn't, I highly encourage you to go back to selection, try again. It's certainly worth it. So I'll go for that. Okay. Of course, our posting season's coming up. If you want to check out, if you're going to either Comox, Greenwood, or Gander specifically, I have some contacts that can really help you out. Nate King is out in Comox. Family man, military, knows the area, really good to work with. Paul Jackman out of Greenwood, one of the top realtors in the valley, really knows what he's doing and what he's talking about. And he'll link you up with, there's SAR techs that have wives or spouses that are realtors as well, so he won't just take all your business. He can give you good references. And Ashley Bullen out in Gander, so please check those out if you're interested, want to support the show. And thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoy this conversation with a course mate of mine, Josh Terry. Rescue.
That's why I did it.
So I predict Apple goes that route. So Tesla makes their car a cell phone, right? Like they've made the robot. For the longest time, it was like, make a robot, put it into a car, and drive the car. And then someone comes along and they're like, no, the car is the robot.
Right.
So Apple,
I'm listening.
For the longest time, they've been talking about an Apple car.
Right.
I don't think they'll ever make an Apple car because making a car is a terrible idea. And it's really hard to make money and yada, yada, yada.
Sure.
But if you can get software that can fit in everyone's car, like AirPlay, you can go to car companies and say, yeah, look, I've got this product because I'm Apple and you want it in your car based on a subscription. Now you get to benefit off all these other car makers without having to make your own car. It's brilliant. Exactly. It's totally brilliant.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's why I'm doing it. I'm happy with my stereo, but I need, like, the Apple CarPlay is key. I rent vehicles that have Apple CarPlay.
Mm.
It's so much better.
Right.
Right. Right now, I drive to London and I have this thing set up with my Waze.
Of course.
And it's like down here and and it's in behind this so I can't see it. Right.
Yeah. You can press any of the buttons.
And it's terrible. But then I rent a car and it's way up here and it's nice and I can, oh, cops ahead. Yeah, that's cool. Right.
Right. Right.
Got a crash ahead. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's so much better. So.
Yeah. And then you'll get a Tesla and you won't have to worry about it.
Well, and you know that I will get one for sure.
What year's your car? 2016. How wild is that? Like, that's not that old.
No.
And the amount that's just changed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
6 years or whatever.
Yeah. Like, so my plan is to keep this car as a project car and then buy a Tesla.
Gotcha.
Because I do love my car.
Yeah.
And
car's pretty cool.
And there's a cop right there. And it's like the Jeep of cars. Hmm. Meaning, the aftermarket community is massive.
Gotcha.
Right?
Yeah.
I can, it doesn't matter what I want to do in my car. If I want to say, change this valve, and there's videos that come up, like 10 people already have them.
Totally.
You watch the video, you change the valve. Yeah. And it's all very simple. You open the hood and you just do it. It's all right there.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
When you compare it like that, I get your Jeep comment for sure. Because that was like, I own a Ford Explorer, and good luck trying to find a YouTube video on how to change.
Oh, no.
It's like, I have a John Deere tractor, and I thought, if I type the model number in, it's going to have video. No, it's like impossible. Yeah. But I can imagine Honda Civic, Subaru, Jeep, like these, where there's lots of aftermarket, Mazda.
Yeah.
3D printing probably takes that to like the next level.
Yeah. So like this is just one guy. There's like four main YouTube guys online and they all have over 1,000 videos just for my car.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Right. Yeah. So if I watch this one guy's a bit crazy for sure.
I love it.
But anyway, he's good for morale.
Oh, you need that.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
how many Star Trek's do we have that are crazy, but they're great
exactly,
for morale?
Exactly. Right. So I'll just decide, I'll watch his video. I'm like, I wish he would have did it a different way. I'll just watch my other guy's video. And then, right?
Yeah.
So I do all the work myself. I love it. So I hopefully I never have to get rid of that car.
But is the car thing that's always been your thing? You've always been a car?
I mean, growing up, you saw growing up at dad's house, right? Like I always had dirt bikes and four wheelers and snowmobiles.
So he's been running that. It's like a sports business or actions. Yeah. Action sport. I don't know.
For
what to
a
call
while.
It.
Yeah, whatever.
Since you were a kid, kind of?
No.
He's kind of been doing it.
He's only been doing it for like the last 15 years,
okay.
Which is kind of like a few years after I left. But I mean, we always had all that stuff.
Gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha.
So I grew up doing
it. Oh, yeah. We talked because the snowmobiling when you're on course and like, okay. Yeah,
everyone remembers that.
Yep. That was great. Like a woman lifting a car off her baby.
So yeah, exactly. Right.
That's great.
So anyway.
Cool, man.
Yeah. I forget what else we were talking about. Oh, yeah. The whole RP2 thing. But anyway,
that's another
conversation.
What mission do you have an idea to chat about?
Well, I mean, I for sure I can talk about the first Griffin mission, but this is a cool one because I have a letter.
Yeah, let's do that.
Right?
Fuck,
and it's at a different. It was at a different squadron, so this is my first mission. So are we just good to go? Yeah. So like, obviously, I've been in Comox since course 6 years ish. Did lots of missions like everyone else. But anyway, the first time I got to go to a different squadron was Gander.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I got to Gander for like 3 weeks for augmentation, just like you're doing here. And luckily I got a mission, which was cool. I was really hoping for a boat mission because that's what everyone's known for on the East Coast.
Dirty boats.
Right? You're going to go do the dirty East Coast boat.
Yeah, the best kind of guy.
Right? So I get this call, and me being from Comox, it's like, cool, I'm going to go do this. Right? And I get there. It's elected that I can run the mission, so that's cool. I'm happy to do that. And so we get the message from JRCC, and it's a friggin' West Coast mission, right? This guy's out in the woods at a fishing camp, and he did something to injure himself on the trail, And now we need to go get him from the woods. I'm like, oh my God. Travel across the whole country for this.
Love it.
Right? But anyway, it's cool. I love it. Yeah, Gander was great. I had a great experience there. The shop morale is awesome. The area is awesome.
I've been asked from some of the Gander guys to downplay Gander. Oh, okay. So we...
Okay. Okay, so you're going to edit that.
No, yeah. No, I got to leave it all in. Yeah. But I was talking about Rescue Mission with Jason Maloney.
Oh,
the
yeah.
whole time we're like, we're going to pretend it's not a Gander. Okay. Well, but it's kind of obvious it was.
I guess what I could say about Gander is... if the situation is correct, it can be a great experience for people.
I think that's anywhere.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
For
Goose
sure.
Bay ought to be not the best place to live on Earth, but I went to the SAR shop.
Yeah.
We don't have SAR ticks there anymore. But,
sure.
And you can see, like, wow, man, if you had a community of people here,
yeah.
you could live here. A couple
of
years, you
know. Yeah, not terrible.
Yeah.
So we get launched and we have all of our stuff and we're going. One big difference that I found being from the West Coast yeah. is that it was very flat, right? Mm. We transited to the mission at like 1,500 feet, which is not a thing on the West Coast,
wow,
right?
The Rockies, yeah.
Which I can talk about. Well, yeah, we talk about it now, but which comes into play after you get the patient, because a lot of things on the West Coast are, you talk to the AC. Obviously, you're going to make the cabin nice and warm, and you're going to ask them to fly as low as possible.
As possible, yeah.
So I'm kind of skipping ahead here, but so I did that after we got the patient. AC is team lead. I'm just wondering if we can, you know, how low can we transit to the hospital? They're like 500 feet.
Yes. I was waiting.
I'm like, wait, what? Yeah, okay, never mind. We're good.
You want us to tax?
So that was just like an idiosyncrasy of Comox or West Coast that was kind of funny that I kind of laughed about. I don't know if anyone else laughed about it.
Well, it is, but because you could have two people that are doing the same job, SAR tech, with a completely different understanding of how the job is.
Sure.
This is what I come up with often, where someone asks what the job's like, what the schedule's like, and you could start with all the variables, because there's so many, but you could also start with it depends on where you are.
Of
like
course.
And yeah. it also depends on who's currently working in the place that you are. Like,
right.
So, yeah, that's funny. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So that was kind of a cool realization for me. We get there. The weather was fine. It happened to be, we didn't know this at the time. It was a fishing camp with 8 Americans, actually.
During the day? Is
this
a night?
No, this is a night mission. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to say we probably got called about 10 o'clock p.m. local.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was nighttime, but we were able to land, I'm going to say 200 feet away from the cabin on like a riverbed, big boulders, like whatever, basketball sized boulders on the riverbed. It wouldn't be easy for a patient to walk on, but easy for us.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. So anyway, we get there. The cormorant stays spooled up, and we're just going to send a no call when we get to him. So we get there and we find this guy, and he was on, I'm going to call it all fours, but it was really like all threes.
Gotcha.
Right? He was kind of like this, but if, you know, the people listening, he had something going on with his right arm.
Okay.
So they had him all nice and warm outside on the deck, on like a semi-covered deck, I think. And, he's just kind of like favoring his right arm. His two legs and his left arm were fine. But we come to find out he's been there. So this is like his position of comfort.
Oh, weird. Okay.
He was sitting there for 6 hours like that.
So it must have been really comfortable.
I guess so.
Yeah,
like
yeah. I should say everything else was so uncomfortable.
Else, yes.
Gotcha.
Exactly. So that was the interesting part to me. So obviously they had him nice and warm. They had pillows under his knees. And I'm sure there was a little bench there that he was leaning up against. And I'm sure he was just moving very minimally for these 6 hours before we got there. So we get there. I mean, he's completely coherent, but you can tell that he's in a lot of pain. Right. And the interesting part, which I didn't know at the time, is he's actually a New York firefighter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was cool. The interesting part about that is being a paramedic ourself is talking to a guy who understands our lingo. Right.
Yeah.
And not only that, I'm going to say, of all the missions that I've done, he had the most medical knowledge of any patient that I had to the point where he would answer questions before I even asked them, because, I'm not a Canadian firefighter. I think anyway, that the American firefighters have a lot of medical experience to the point where they might actually be even be paramedics.
I think that, yeah, because they're on scene. You got to think population density. You got to think their metropolitans are outrageous.
Exactly.
Compared to ours,
right? Yeah.
You could probably name most of them by heart. You can't do that with the states.
Yeah, exactly. So he was, if he wasn't answering questions before I asked them, he was providing me the information before I even asked them. Gotcha. Right? So that was kind of cool. So we kind of went through our primary survey and found out what we got. There was obviously something going on with his right arm. I wasn't sure. Mm. Obviously, you can't diagnose that in the field. But so we decided that this guy's not moving, right? He's not moving in the state that he's in. So I talked to the guy. I forget. Actually, I mean, I have his name here. I have a letter that we can go to.
We won't say his name, but...
So I asked the guy, and... I said, look, man, like, you obviously have some medical experience. Like, we need to get you. You are going to get to this helicopter, right? So I could kind of talk with him candidly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I wouldn't do with most patients. But again, he was fully coherent and he was understanding our lingo. So I'm like, look, man, like, we need to get to this helicopter, right? So either we're going to walk there somehow or we're going to have to hoist you,
yeah,
right? And he straight up said, he's like, well, I don't want to hoist.
Of course.
I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, that's cool. Like, I'll take that into consideration. But if we need to, we will. Right? I'm like, look at this. What's going on? So I'm like, all right. Well, we're both team leads on the call, actually. But I was acting as team lead. So I got the other Star Tech there. He did his initial set of vitals. And we decided that we're going to give this guy some pain management. So we did that. We did everything, kept him nice and warm. We let the helicopter know what we had. We were going to be at least half an hour to 45 minutes with this guy.
Did you go the narcotic route? Did you go like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory? Like
we did go the narcotic route, okay, because he was in, and as being a paramedic, obviously you get to different patients with different pain thresholds. Mm-hmm. This guy was clearly in pain. Mm-hmm. When he was in his position of comfort, I would say he was uncomfortable, maybe 4 or 5. If he moved at all, he was in a 10.
Wow. Yeah.
Right? And for me to say that he's in a 10, like, he was in a 10.
Yeah.
Some people will sit there on the cot. I'm in 10 out of 10 pain. Well, you're not.
Yeah.
Maybe you are, but maybe not.
You're not crying. Right? You're not screaming. You're not yelling. Yeah. You know, yeah.
This guy was, when he moved even just a little bit, was in 10 out of 10 pain. Yeah. So I'm like, well, I'm not, obviously for patient comfort, I'm not going to hoist you like this or nothing. So anyway. Yeah, we gave him some Gravol, obviously, and then went the narcotic route. We gave him our maximum first dosage, and then just kind of assessed from there. Nothing happened with that first dosage. So at this time, we're starting to clean up a little bit, letting the helicopter know that we're probably going to be there within the next 15 minutes. Between the other Star Tech and myself, we were cleaning up. Like, okay, man, we're just going to give you another shot of the narcotics. We went half dose that time of what we first gave him, and it was really interesting how these drugs work.
Mm.
Because like I said, he wasn't moving right until we gave him that second dose, and about 2 or 3 minutes later he just got up and started walking, right? And yeah. I feel like the way I remember it is like we were sitting there doing things, I'm not expecting this guy to do anything. And all of a sudden, I look around, and he's walking away from me. I'm like, whoa, hold up, stop, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, we got to go now. I'm like, okay. I'm like, all right, we got to get all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, we're walking to the helicopter. I'm like, your arm's good? He's like, yep, we got to go. I'm like, all right, let's do it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was walking to the helicopter. It was great. It was amazing to see how fast those drugs worked, for sure.
Okay.
So that was cool.
And there was clearly a therapeutic dose. I mean, you give a bunch, and just like, yeah, listen, man. A little bit more, and all of a sudden, like, you're good to go.
It's exactly.
Like,
yeah. So that was really good for me to see, anyway, because it was an in-person showing of how our protocols work, mm-hmm. right? And it did work for him, so it was great. And he was, I'd say, I mean, he was probably 6'1", over 200 pounds, and so I mean, our drugs worked for him.
Yeah.
So it was great.
It's good to know.
So yeah, all to say, he had friends, or he had. Yeah, both friends and family there, and we got all of his stuff, got him into helicopter. Other than that, it was a very, very easy trip to the hospital pad, and we dropped him off, and that was fine. We had lots of great conversations while we were getting ready or doing our protocols with him having the medical experience was interesting to talk to him about what we're going to do. And he would start going off into his world and his what he knew how it would work and what he would do in the situation. So that was really interesting to hear a different perspective on that. And then, yeah. And then obviously we dropped him off at the hospital and we went home with no incident. All was well.
Nice.
And that was, I'm going to say, I mean, it's December now. It was probably 6 months ago, I'm going to say. 6 or 7 months ago.
Okay.
Not thinking of anything of it, just another mission. It was fairly benign, to be honest, as far as missions that we do. We could land, obviously. The weather was fine at night. Mm-hmm. There wasn't really much risk as far as what we're used to, I would say. And then I get posted to my new shop here in Ontario, and I barely even have a mailbox or anything, and I'm just kind of getting my feet on the ground. And then I get a letter in my newly formed mailbox, which shouldn't have a letter in it. Right. I'm like, who's sending me a letter? No, barely anyone knows I'm even here. So I just kind of opened it up, and the first thing I saw was like a patch, like a New York firefighter patch.
Oh, man.
So he sent me a patch. So that was super cool.
Dude.
And then he sent me this letter. And I've never really had a letter from a mission. That's the one thing about our trade, obviously, is, I mean, obviously being healthcare providers, it'd be interesting for us to know what happened later.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, from my experience anyway, 99% of the time.
If not more. This gets asked, I get asked this often, like, do you ever hear from people you rescue, you know? From a paramedic standpoint, that isn't something you could possibly do unless there was you deliver a baby, something that's like a very rare thing. You know, you do a 20 year career, happens once. From a SARTEC point of view, you don't see patients all day, every day. But oftentimes they're involved in this huge rescue effort or multiple agencies. It's irrelevant if the person's hurt or not. We're putting, you know, maybe a dozen people's lives that day for this event or to rescue someone. Knowing like how they come out of it on the other end. I got to talk to a plane crash survivor.
Oh, cool.
And we rescued at 413. I wasn't part of the mission. I was at the shop. And same sort of thing, you know, talking to him. Now, this was 2 years after the plane crash. One of the things that was crazy was I was telling him information. Now, 2 years after this crash, I told him that we parachute and stuff like that. Now, on this mission, someone had hoisted. And he was like, wait a minute. So if I was more injured and I needed medical help, you also had that. Like he viewed it as we were just bringing him out of the woods. And I was like, yeah, we would have, if you were injured, someone was parachuting out of that plane and coming to get you. And seeing this guy's reaction to this new information years after, like he had this emotional response because he said, you know, wow, so I was safer than I thought I was, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So from our point of view, we're like, I want to know how you carried on, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really interesting to me for this one specific case to actually get some feedback. And I've just received it and I'm actually going to reach out to him as well, send him a patch and just kind of let him I got it. And, I mean, it was a pleasure to meet him and glad to hear that everything is all as well. So that was the first mission. I don't know if you want me to, I don't know if there's much to talk about in here. He just kind of, he explained why he was there, that he's been there for many years. He just kind of gave me a little bit of info on the fact that he had to do surgery, and just kind of went into the fact that the reason he's able to be back to doing his job as a first responder is because of we were there that day for him. So
yeah.
So it was his first. He said it was his first time being on the other end, and he really appreciated that, and he's able to appreciate the work that he does now too for other people as
very
well,
cool.
In like a different light.
It can be humbling if you're always the guy. You know, this guy's obviously always the guy. I mean, a New York firefighter—that's world famous
for sure, man.
It can be life changing. Seems a little cliche, but certainly impactful.
Yeah. So that was really cool. Yeah, when I received that, that was a really cool thing. Just to kind of like the fact that he's not even in our country,
mm-hmm.
and he took the steps. It says at the end that he had to take a few steps to find me.
Of course, right? Yeah.
But because I've moved bases since then, just the fact that he actually took the time and effort to reach out was super cool.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna do the same. So
that's awesome.
So yeah,
I like that a lot.
So that was really really cool. So
sweet.
Yeah.
You're on something called IR.
I am on IR.
Is that independent relocation? I've always wondered what the actual IR stands for.
So the way I understand it is it's called imposed restriction.
Imposed restriction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So which means, and that's just how I would have to look.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Which means.
We're making all this up anyway. I'm just curious.
And like, that's fine.
Yeah, I just say IR, but I was curious. Yeah.
So imposed restriction means like I, for whatever reason, family reasons, personal reasons, am restricting myself to bringing my family to where I am.
Gotcha.
Right?
You're imposing the restriction.
I am. Gotcha. Yes. So the military, we all sign on the dotted line in the military saying that we will do this and shall do this and understand that there's a possibility of many different scenarios in our long career. It just happens to be that in this particular time of life for me, moving my family isn't an option,
right,
for multiple reasons.
Oh yeah. No.
Obviously it's not ideal, but, yeah, having the IR option gives me the opportunity to go and continue my professional career and allow my family to stay back at home,
mm-hmm,
and continue their professional career.
Right.
Yeah. So that's,
I mainly bring it up only because it's a thing in the military that doesn't get talked about all that, yeah, often. And certainly, yeah, if someone wasn't in the military, it'd be the last thing to talk about. There's so many other things. But knowing that it the option exists, you're not always moving everyone around all the time. Well, maybe you are. I mean, I certainly am. Yeah, so if I got posted tomorrow, I'm moving everything.
Of course.
And there's lots of people that have older children that are in university and college that may do the same thing, impose restriction.
Yeah.
Independent relocation seems pretty, that is a decent acronym.
For sure. And I mean, it's good enough that I'd probably have to look it up and make sure that I'm
right.
That I'm saying. Exactly. But yeah, so now I would say, again, this is my first year on it.
Yeah.
I would say, and this can be a long conversation, but obviously when you sign on that dotted line, 25 years is a long time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the funny thing about life is that the only thing that stays the same is change, mm-hmm, right? So I think what we need to understand is that over those 25 years, there will be times that your family is postable or movable, and there's going to be times that they're not.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So, and I think it's great that the military has a provision for that, for these times that my family is not, and I'm in a job that I have passion for and I love, and so is my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a provision for us to kind of get through that gap.
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, when the kids, let's say when the kids move away or those other restrictions that are keeping my family back home, if they go away one day, well, then maybe now my family's movable again.
Right.
Right. I would say in like the general sense of terms, at the start of someone's career, when they're young and have a young family, maybe you're postable. Everybody can move. But then maybe in the middle of it, when kids are growing up and they're in high school, they don't want to move, right? So then maybe now your family might not be as movable, and then it might change again though,
mm-hmm,
right? And then in the latter part of your career, you might get back into that point where you can move again. So
I think the other interesting thing is that maybe you want to move lots. That certainly is available as well. Like if you want to move, family or not, that's an option. I mean, I can think of a Sartek who's been posted lots. Just they grabbed opportunities that they thought were beneficial to them, and if there's not enough people, or it doesn't, that when they select someone to move or get posted, there's a how long has this person been at the shop, are they, you know, and we got to move them. But there isn't the other way around where, oh, we can't post them because they just, it's not like that. So I think having those options, yeah,
that's, again, this is a, yeah, pretty big conversation for sure. And I think you're going to see, or I hope anyway, my hope for the future of the leadership is to understand that, I mean, maybe it's okay to stay somewhere for a little bit longer than we used to, right? For different reasons.
I'd be curious to see. I know that the virtual working thing is definitely a topic.
Yeah.
The other side of that conversation is you now have to increase resources, because the example becomes a bunch of people get quote unquote posted out of somewhere like Comox,
yeah,
but they don't actually move. They get posted, sure, to Trenton virtually.
Right.
While someone physically gets posted into Comox, of you course need more resources.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious how, I wonder if they say, well, it actually doesn't have to be a military base. Maybe that. So working virtually becomes this more expanding thing. We're completely speculating, of course. But there's downsides to that too, because then where does the resources? Like, one of the best things about being in the military is that when you go to a military base, you're guaranteed a gym membership that you don't have to pay for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're guaranteed a shower and you're guaranteed food.
Of course.
It's like every time. And so one of the best parts about, like, I've spent a week here in Trenton in the quote shacks, you know, like in the hotel on base or whatever, not a civvy hotel, but when I'm coming here, I've got no worries in my head because I know that there's going to be a gym there. If they send me to, I don't know, Oakville or something, let's say there was something for me to do in Oakville, I'd be going to Oakville to a hotel, and we all know how hotel gyms are.
Of course.
So,
Absolutely. And I mean, that ties into like being in the military in general, where, I mean, you're pretty secure. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
We all just came through this, these COVID times. And I mean, there's people that are not in the military who are professionals and have families and bills that, they may have been concerned about losing all of that.
Right.
We were not.
We were getting paychecks.
Right?
Yeah.
We were not getting paid we were not worried about that. We were getting paychecks. So there is that for sure. There's that security, right? Where when you do sign on that dotted line, it's actually kind of the reverse, where the military is guaranteeing you a job, mm-hmm. I mean, bar any craziness happens, for 25 years, right? So you have a job and a pension, a place to live, all that stuff for 25 years, where people on the civilian side don't have that.
Yeah.
I mean, they can be...
Comes at a cost.
Of course.
Security, I mean, for you and I, security is higher than the list. We're in the military, you know?
Right.
So I like to ask some people this. I get asked often,
mm-hmm.
what trade should I join? Like, and I've got my own answer, and I try to answer specific to the person. But first of all, I know nothing about the Navy, so you'll never get an opinion on me for the Navy. I don't know anything about it. Yeah. The Army, I only know through other people. And my personal pick is the Air Force. And I know you were Air Force as well. Now you've been a Star Tech for 7 years. Do you have an opinion on, like, if you were to tell someone, okay, you should pick this trade.
And is this to join the military or in hopes of being a Star Tech?
Yeah, in hopes of being a Star Tech.
Yeah, so that's a tough one for me because we all know nothing is guaranteed.
Yeah, of course.
Right? So that's a big conversation in letting them, in saying, because these people are probably coming to you that don't know much about the military.
Right.
Right? They're going to kind of, maybe their expectation would be, well, I'm going to join the military and they don't even know what that means. Do I pick a job?
Yeah.
Or like they don't like, right? Or are we all just in the military doing the same thing?
Right.
Right. They don't know what that means. But then also there would be some sort of expectation that after a certain amount of time, I'm going to be a Star Tech, which is not true.
You're right.
Right.
Absolutely.
So yeah. So if someone came to me from the civilian side and asked that question, yeah, there'd be a long conversation for
sure.
Yeah. First of all, I would let them know, I'll try and keep it short. You need to pick a trade, and I might need to explain that to them what that means, but you need to pick a job in the military that you like, right? Because that might be your job for a long time.
Right.
Right. And then if they can find a job in the military that they like, okay, cool, let's do that. Now join the military. Now you're going to have to do all the stuff that you do at the start of the military career. Okay, cool. Now we're there. Now, do you still feel like you want to be a Star Tech? Okay, cool. Well, then, then we can start working on that.
Would you give a specific recommendation to the person that says, no, Josh, all my eggs in one basket, I'm going Star Tech. I don't care if I don't make Star Tech and on the other end, I don't like the job.
Okay.
I'm going all eggs in one basket.
Okay.
What job should I pick?
So that would narrow it down. And again, it would be specific on the person. I would say the top answers, I mean, medic would be a top answer, right? If they have some sort of passion or think that they can succeed in that trade, because we all know that being selected to go on selection has some requirements as well,
right?
You need to be you need to excel a little bit at least, and pad that resume in the current trade that you're in. So if I think that, you know, maybe they could do good in that, if they're more of like a, you know, like a book smart person, maybe that. Maybe if they don't want to do that, then obviously we all know, I'm going to say I won't put a number on it, but a large percentage of Sartex were ex-army, were ex-infanteers, right? Yeah. Which is not a bad thing. A lot of infanteer skills and skill sets transfer over to our job very well.
Big time. It also cuts a year off your application.
Which not a lot of people know.
Right.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And even some higher chains of command don't even know that.
Right. Yeah. So I've been spreading that, really trying to spread it, especially through the podcast. Yeah. I know that we have courses, or at least when you look at who's applying or who's making or not making it on courses, there's it's being skewed with this big, a larger portion of combat trade people are rolling in, and perhaps, wait a minute, I only need three, you know, and you can put your application. So,
For sure. Those would be my first two. My first two would be medical, and then possibly, you know, infantry.
Yeah.
The other really cool option, which I've personally seen, and now it's starting to come to light and people are starting to accept, is that they're now accepting 4-year reservists. So there's a reservist going on selection this year.
Right.
Who has only been in the military for, less than 5 years. More than four, less than five.
So I have to be I've got to be really particular about it. It's because the service is concurrent, though. That's like the key.
Exactly.
You can get a reserve job, and if you have like a contract and then 2 or 3 days off and another contract, that's not going to count.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. But that was never an option before, right? So that's maybe another option where if someone isn't too sure, and if they approach it the correct way, they could be a part-time military member. In the right job and in the right frame to be there for 4 years and not really have that expectation of 25-year contract. And then if Sartec doesn't work out, they can just...
I think I would recommend that to someone with already a pretty set up gig.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Out of high school, I'm not recommending that to anybody.
No, for sure. I mean, the one in particular individual that I know... obviously had that. They had things set up. And there's another one now that is following in his footsteps that will also, if he continues on the same path, should be successful.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that's like two in the next couple of years that should be like 4-year reservists. And if they're successful, then they'll be Sartex.
Sweet. So there was an applicant who also successfully decommissioned.
That's pretty cool too.
That has been an option in the past, but there's a lot of anecdotes about not being able to decommission when the day comes.
Right.
This just happened, you know. Yeah. So that's big news too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also get asked about direct entry a lot. And there was a bit of excitement recently because there was some information passed that this direct entry was totally a thing, but anyway, I went and confirmed it up with some sources. They are working on reviving the comments are, it's still on hold. It's been on hold. They never canceled it. It's on hold.
Of course.
But they are pushing for it. That would be pretty cool as well. I had some people email me with some pretty impressive resumes that I'm like, God dang it. If there was just a direct entry,
and that's the thing. And that's of course we all know that direct entry was a pilot project a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think it was highly successful. I think someone coming off the streets that don't know much about the military or Sartec in general. You said it like these people that I think were successful in the direct entry, they had a pretty big resume for skill sets that we currently have as Sartecs on the civilian side,
mm-hmm.
right? So I mean, just in general, parachutists, rock climbers, possibly a paramedic. Right.
Well, the prerequisite for sure, you had to be primary care paramedic, bare minimum.
Well, yeah, and I mean, who knows what it's going to be moving forward, but these core skill sets that we have as Sartecs, these people already had them.
Yeah, they're rolling in with experience. Yeah.
But then it wasn't even guaranteed.
Of course,
they took a certain number every year, and only half of that number were allowed to go to selection. And then once they were on selection, they were just a regular number on selection, so they may or may not be successful.
Yeah,
so that's a big, big hill to climb.
Yeah, there is a positive. My understanding was, if you're a direct entry, should you pass selection, you were guaranteed a spot on course. If you pass selection,
you mean if you're found suitable?
Yes, that's the more accurate way to say it. If you're found suitable, and I call it selection still because now it's called something else.
Yeah.
so I can keep calling it selection. Yeah, but
well, it was selection when we went
exactly,
through,
so it'll and everyone knows what we're talking about. Yeah, so we're not talking about, we're making it up. But yeah, so okay.
Yeah, so
that'd be interesting as well. I mean, ultimately, the military in general, let's be honest, not in a position to turn people around. I don't think I'm breaching any policy by saying that. That's like public knowledge in the news. You go and look it up. We're struggling with numbers. I don't think we're in a position to turn people away.
So. Yeah, for sure. And
just gotta make sure to meet the standard.
Yeah, and you're right when you say the military in general, because I'm not sure if it was you I was talking to or somebody I was talking to brought up a good point. No, it was another buddy of mine. That we're moving into the times here in the next 5 years where we're getting people that were on the 20-year contract and the 25-year contract.
Oh, interesting.
And in 1 year, both of them are going to be able to retire, right? So that's something. So this happened in the early 2000s. Yeah. So now we're moving into that phase where we're going to have double the amount of people
eligible
for retirement in the next couple of years in the military. So because we're already hurting for people, we're going to be hurting even more in the next couple of years. So that's a really interesting point.
A positive means there's lots of jobs for people.
There will be
now,
lots of jobs
now,
for people.
Now, I don't like to get too much, and I always have to, because you know me, I like talking about society and human condition. Sprinkle some politics in there, but I try not to do that. However, we do know that, like, should there be any sort of recession or any sort of like downturn in the economy, military is a great place to turn to for a job. And I think that could happen that
for sure.
You know, certainly someone will turn, you know, someone's going to turn and be like, well, I'm going to join up. So,
well, and yeah. And I think you're going to see that. And I mean, that's kind of how I got into the military. My whole mom's side of the family was Air Force. I did my own thing, worked in the automotive industry, got my college diploma and all that fun stuff. And the automotive industry crashed, and I lost my job.
Mm.
And now here I am.
Yeah.
Right?
Are you glad
I absolutely am. Industry, I mean, I loved my job previously.
But you get to do it on your own car now. Exactly. And you can afford to do it on your own car now. Yeah,
so, and obviously, we live in our own little sandbox inside the military as a StarTech.
Yeah, yeah.
So my experiences may vary.
Yeah.
My experience in the military is a good one.
Yeah, experiences may vary. Yeah. No purchase necessary. See store for details.
Exactly, right?
Must be 18.
So, but yeah, my personal experience in the military is a very positive one for many reasons.
Me too.
The military wasn't foreign to me. I was born in Trenton. I had a military, half of my family was military. I kind of knew what I was getting into. But if you can embrace those changes.
Yeah, I didn't really know. I mean, I was in cadets, but I guess I had an idea.
Yeah.
And I did like their summer camps and stuff. Yeah. So I had, like, but you don't know, right? When you join the military. Nope. I joined straight out of high school, and really, like, the military is designed for someone straight out of high school because you have zero responsibilities and you don't own anything.
Well, and that's
and so thing. you show up to basic, they give you food, they give you somewhere to sleep, and you've got that. Like, you could do your whole career like this, you know, and someone tells you how to, they even teach you how to brush your teeth at basics, right? So, join later as well.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because that was actually kind of the struggle that I had when I first joined, because I joined when I was 27.
Couldn't imagine.
And they were treating me like I was an 18-year-old kid.
Right.
Although I had a mortgage, I had kids back home, I had a previous job, I've done post-secondary education, and now they're starting to treat me like an 18-year-old kid who lives in shacks. So that was a little bit of a power struggle for me.
So I only considered that recently.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
I went to basic when I was 18, and I, like, the whole time you look around it, and now, like, I look back and it's kind of funny. We had, like, multiple people in their 30s or whatever, but I probably did the same thing. Like, we're all 18-year-olds here. Yeah. You know, we're all just at basic because you're at the bottom. But it's totally possible someone's accomplished something else. I mean, clearly that's an ego thing, but it can still be uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, for me, it was just, I just wanted to be treated like respectfully, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know how to brush my teeth, guys.
Exactly, right?
I'm good, right? Yeah. So, and that,
like, how do I do this? Like, right? You're putting the wrong way in your mouth.
Yeah. So, anyway, I just kind of, I had my own experiences there for sure. But, anyway, it's been super positive for me.
Okay,
I'm very happy to be here for sure. Yeah.
Well, I really like that you sat down with me and, chatted out this, the mission, especially. I mean, we got into talking about the military, which is cool, and yeah, lots of people want to know about it. So, man, appreciate you as a friend, and thank you for sitting down.
For sure, man. Anytime.
Rescue.
Yeah, rescue.